Welcome to the TCK VOF. We are here to connect third culture kids with the conversation surrounding faith. In our series, we will also have guests and conversations on topics relevant to cross-cultural kids. This podcast is brought to you by Crew, a caring community passionate about connecting people to Jesus Christ. Basically, how do you answer the question who you are and who do you want your future self to be? In psychology, identity encompasses memories, experiences, relationships, and values that create one's sense of self. A person's understanding of those components helps with the development of a steady sense of who one is over time, even as new facets are developed and incorporated. Today, we will have some special guests who also grew up not only as third culture kids, but specifically as missionary kids. So basically, a missionary kid is their parents were missionaries in other countries, but they'll talk more about that. So our topic for this episode is missionary kids and identity. Before we start into some of the other questions, I'm going to have everyone introduce themselves and talk about what makes them an MK and where they're living now. Paul, do you mind going first?
Yeah, my name's Paul. I grew up as a missionary kid in Jamaica, and my parents were from the U.S. So I was there kind of from birth until college. And now, as an adult, I work for Crew, specifically with our ministry to missionary kids, known as MK2MK. And so what we do is encouraging the whole missionary family by discipling MKs themselves and putting on programming to bless their family.
Thanks for sharing. So Sarah, could you share next?
Sure. My name is Sarah. My parents were missionaries with Crew, so I grew up in Slovenia with my three younger siblings from when I was about 6 years old until 12 years old. Then we moved to Colorado, which is where I went to all of middle school and high school. After that, I studied communication at Wheaton College in hopes of becoming a missionary one day as well. And then after college, I got to spend 2 years with Crew back in Slovenia where I'd grown up. And that's actually where I met my now husband, Dan, and we're currently in Ohio, but preparing to go as long-term missionaries to Central Asia. I love everything to do with the outdoors. I especially like riding my bike. People say I'm adventurous, but also easygoing. And I really like to travel, but I think I really desire and long to be rooted and settled in one place. It just hasn't happened yet, but I'm hoping it will soon. Talking about identity, I'd say I'm an American or a Coloradan who's a Slovene at heart.
Thanks. Hannah, could you share?
Yeah. As Elizabeth said, my name is Hannah, and my parents were also missionaries with Crew, actually in Romania for the first 10 years of my life, and then Hungary. So it's interesting because most people, I think, divide their life up based on school or based on life events, but for me, it's based on country. My family is also from South Carolina, so we had the interesting mix of this colder European culture with the really warm, southern, welcoming, hospitable, just really different dynamics there. I'm currently in Orlando, Florida, and I'd say the main thing that has stuck with me through all these years is my love of bread and my love of stories. So I'm excited to be here with you all today to talk through some stories.
Nice. Yeah, and I realized I didn't introduce myself. I'm Elizabeth, and I'm also a missionary kid. For me, my parents actually were missionaries to the Philippines, and I lived there from ages 2 to 11. I came back and lived in Orlando, Florida. I am about to move to Phoenix, Arizona. I'm excited for that. The first question I'm going to ask to everyone, for the cultures you identify with, which one do you identify with the most? So Paul, if you could start, that would be great.
Yeah, I feel like this has changed over my life because I was born in Jamaica and lived there until college. I definitely identified more with being Jamaican. Like me and my siblings, we didn't even call ourselves MKs. And so now it's funny working for MK2MK, like we never grew up thinking of ourselves that way. We're like, oh, MKs come for 3 years and then they leave. But for us, we're like, we're Jamaican and we have American parents. But now, as I've spent more time in the US, I've understood more of how my parents' culture, you know, really did trickle down into influencing how I view the world and see it. And so there's definitely a mixture of things. When it's up to me, I live on island time. But when I am responsible for meetings or like responsible for what I do, I can be really type A compared to my friends from Jamaica. And so there's this really interesting clash of professional and social things. And so now I would definitely say the balance has begun to tip towards American as I've lived here longer.
Yeah. Can you clarify for us what you mean by island time?
Yeah. So island time is a bit more culturally appropriate way to think of it would be as being relationally focused, or the idea is also event focused, like versus time focused. And so island time is like the tendency for cultures often on islands like the Philippines or Jamaica to be more casual about starting a meeting on time or ending the meeting on time, but more focused on like the people and the relationships and the event itself. It also means Jamaicans will be very late and their weddings will be like 4 hours long.
Can you give us an example of a story, how that relates?
Yeah, well, this is kind of recent. My family laughed about it, which is kind of a grim story. Our dad passed away last year, and so we had his funeral in Jamaica. We joked, we're like, it felt like we had three different funerals because we had the funeral in Kingston, like where the church that he worked with was. And then we like took a long bus ride to the town where my parents first lived. It was supposed to be just like a burial service there and then quickly to having the internment. But then that became its whole nother service. And there was actually one pastor who's like an awesome friend of my dad who spoke, prayed at the first service. And then he came to the second service as well. Because of how much people respected him, they were like, oh, we have to introduce him. And he pretty much preached like his own sermon, sang a song, that it just kept like dragging on the event more and more. And by the end of it, me and my siblings and my mom just had to laugh because it's like, this is what he would have wanted. This is normal for my dad.
Yeah, that's a cool story. Thanks for sharing. That's cool that you guys got to like do different types of funerals, different people could experience, different friends. I'm gonna ask the same question to Sarah next.
It's changed a lot over time. When I was in Slovenia, I would say I could relate to what Paul said. I felt Slovene. It just so happened that my passport was American and my parents were American. But then when I came back to the States, it was much more difficult to identify that because I couldn't say, oh, I'm Slovene, because my passport didn't say I was Slovene and I spoke English with an American accent. You're in middle school and it's just, middle school is a rough time anyway. I remember I had a time where after we'd been friends for a while, she was like, first, you really annoyed me because all you ever did was talk about Slovenia and made me not want to be your friend. And so that that really hurt. And I think that really changed the trajectory for me. So I realized that my Sloveneness led me to being more rejected. And so I very much like toned down my Sloveneness and tried more and more to just fit in and become more American. It wasn't until like my junior year of high school that I got connected with MK to MK and went on a summer mission with them. And that's when I really learned what the TCK identity was, about how you can relate to both cultures, but not really have full ownership or identity in either one. And realized that, oh, even though I don't live in Slovenia anymore, I'm still a TCK. I'm still a third culture kid. But then even among other third culture kids, I felt like a lesser third culture kid because I wasn't like Paul, who, you know, saw himself as more Jamaican. I, you know, now saw myself as more American. Felt kind of ashamed that I'd let that Slovene part of me die. But then I went and lived in Slovenia again as an adult. That really reawakened a lot of the Slovene part of me. And I was able to name what parts of my personality or my way of relating to people was more Slovene in me than I'd thought. So now I'd say I'm identifying more as American now since I've spent more time here. But still the Slovene part of me, I want, you know, now I'm more committed to keeping that alive and letting it be expressed a bit more.
Yeah, I totally laughed at that because I relate 100%. Because I moved here when I was in fifth grade as well. And sometimes even now people question why I talk about the Philippines. Because they're like, you were 11 when you moved here. Like, it shouldn't be that much part of your life. And I'm like, you don't understand.
It is.
But it is. It is like a huge part of your life. Because, you know, when you're a kid, like those are your formational years. Just like you, I've spent the majority of my life in America, but that part of me is always going to be there no matter how old I get. And I never went back to the Philippines as an adult, so it's not the exact same, but I do feel like, especially in middle school, I don't know if you relate to this, but for me, it was a bit awkward because I'm like, I didn't know how to adjust because I'm like Asian on the inside, but yet I'm American. I speak English. My parents are American. Unless I told them I lived in the Philippines, they would have no idea. I completely like relate with you on that. So Hannah, if you could answer that question, that'd be great too.
Yeah, I think it's interesting kind of what both Sarah and Paul shared, because I feel like for me, I've had a little bit of a different experience. So when I was growing up in Romania and Hungary, mostly Hungary is where a lot of my formational memories are, I remember distinctly feeling, yes, a sense of being one with the culture, but also a sense of otherness or being apart. And so I would say that even like when I was in Hungary, I identified as American, even though when I was living there, I didn't necessarily act American. I adopted different Hungarian ways of life. When I moved to the state, I distinctly remember feeling the same thing, but the other direction.
Yeah.
That I was not American. I think that's just because like whenever I would come face to face with the differences in myself and the other culture, I would feel a separation. And so it was just from, I think, that understanding that there's this dynamic where I connect to both.
Yeah.
I'd even say like now too, I relate more to my Hungarian side, even though I live in America. And even though I haven't lived in Hungary for a significant amount of time in a while. And I think that's just because those are my most formational memories. And that's where those were. Like, I remember the street where I lived. I remember my neighbors. I remember our cherry tree. I remember like our neighbors coming over and picking the cherries. I remember like, say, buying Hungarian groceries and coming to the States and calling things by their Hungarian names and no one knowing what it was. So I think that is like how I identified. But I can just remember this one summer where I was at an English camp in Hungary for Hungarians. And it was actually a summer project that Crew does called Speak Out. I'd recommend it to like anyone. It was fantastic. But it was Hungarians and Americans together in one situation, believing and non-believing. And I think it was amazing to me because if I remember and think back about my entire life, that is where I felt the most belonging and the most home was at that summer project, which is interesting because I didn't grow up with those people. I spent a summer with them.
Yeah.
But it was the combination of both of those cultures and the acceptance that both can exist in the same place.
That's totally
and that is like the culture. I think that just that combination.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Thanks for sharing. Okay, so now we're going to transition to where we're going to ask three different questions to individual people. Paul, the question I want to ask you is, what does your passport country mean to you? And what does your host country, where you grew up in, mean to you?
So it's a funny question for me. That's pretty common to think of TCKs in that way of like passport culture versus host culture. That's one easy way to talk about it. But for me, they're both my passport culture because of being born in Jamaica. I have dual citizenship. My parents are from the US, so I have American citizenship from them. But for me, early on, my American culture was something I wanted to reject. Like I wanted to be like, oh, I'm not American. I'm not a tourist. I belong here. You know, I would kind of try to argue my way or defend my Jamaicanness like to my friends, even then I sounded very American. And I've always sounded more American compared to my siblings. And so that's always been a little bit of a point of shame for me. It was when I came to college, I had to come to grips more of being able to fit in and realizing like, oh, there are a lot of things about American culture that I do understand through my parents that I understood. And even the ways I can look back now and see we were very much immersed in culture in Jamaica, we still saw things that were different. Like we'd be like, oh, haha, like Jamaicans are this way. It's one thing we joke about. It's not really a funeral or a wedding until someone goes up and starts singing a song, like without being on the program. Like they have to get up there and someone's got to sing a song that was not planned for and it's not very good. So we'd laugh, we're like, oh, Jamaicans are like that. And so there was a sense of being apart, but together with the culture as well. And so now it's funny too, looking at Jamaica as my both host culture and my secondary kind of passport culture, where I do still feel a sense of belonging and a sense of that. I know that will always be special and part of who I am, but there's also a sadness or kind of a growing grief of the longer I am away from there, the further away it feels like from who I am. Is there going to be some day where I no longer feel very Jamaican at all? It feels like a distant memory. So I think there's part of me that is also like wrestling with that of losing something.
I feel that. I kind of felt that a little bit coming to America, where I felt like I had to defend that I was part Asian. I didn't like it when people called me American. I'm like, I don't want to be American.
Totally.
Sarah, the question I would like to ask you is, how do you identify yourself currently? If that is different from in the past, how has that changed over time?
Like in my introduction, I said I feel like I'm an American who's Slovene at heart, like a Slovene American. It definitely has changed. Like I think I was sharing earlier that it went from being, we talk about there's like the quadrant of how you feel and versus like how you look or appear to others. In one corner, you have like adopted, like I look different from the people I'm around, but I feel the same as the people I'm around. Or you mirror them, like I look and feel like everybody else around me. Or there's another quadrant of the foreigner, which is you look different from everybody and you feel different from everybody, like Paul was saying, the tourist.
Yeah.
And then another one is hidden immigrant, which is where you look like everybody else around you, but you feel different. So like what you were saying, like, I didn't want to be American. Remember the Asian part of me too. Learning about that when I first came from Slovenia to America, there was just so much dissonance in that. Like Hannah was saying, like I felt so different and I almost wanted to highlight those differences of the Slovene part of me. But everybody expected me to be American and to fit in. So when the teacher says, you need to turn in all your assignments written in cursive. And I was like, I've never learned to write in English cursive.
Yeah.
Or I found out that people don't wear the same shirt 2 days in a row because, oh, gross, it's dirty. You got to change your clothes every day. Whereas in Slovenia, people have one outfit that they wear all week. And you only, if you change outfits every day, you're seen as if you're showing off your riches and all your fancy clothes. It was all that, the dissonance was really hard. And so you almost like, there's a pendulum of either stubbornly clinging to my differences and no, I'm going to be different and I want everybody to know. Or you can swing to the pendulum of, okay, I'll just blend in, try to observe, figure it out and try not to be different. Yeah. And so the different parts of my life, I feel like I've swung to different ends of the pendulum. I think I realized when I was living in Slovenia as an adult, because a lot of my memories and stuff were more subconscious memories because I was 12 years old when I left. So I do have a lot of memories, but if people asked, oh, have you been to this lake? I could say, the name sounds familiar, but I don't know. And then going there, I'd see, oh yeah, I have been here. I have a memory of. So as an adult, I was able to more critically think and realize things that were, oh, this is a Slovene culture aspect of me. Oh, that's American aspect. But then also realizing how much of that is like just a mix. That's kind of the whole thing of a third culture kid is it's a mix, that it's not one or the other. And for me, like a hard transition was actually to join my team of Americans who are working in Slovenia. Because with my Slovene friends, I could go back to, I'm in Slovenia, but I'd forgotten the language. So it took me a little bit to learn the language. And then with my American teams, you know, they're expecting me to see it through their lens of an American, cool, I've come to this really cool but different place. But I don't see Slovenia that way. You know, I see it as my home. But then I also see it as a different foreign place that I'm re-getting to know. I realized how different I was, even from my American teammates who are now living in Slovenia.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I know kind of growing up, I always thought I had to choose the either or, but I realized that you can actually be a both and, you don't really have to choose. I'm gonna move on to Hannah. For the cultures you identify with, which one do you identify with the most?
I think kind of like I was saying earlier, Hungary would be the culture that I identify with the most. Not because I speak Hungarian, because sadly I don't. Not because I know always how to use the post office in Hungary, because I don't. But just because when I'm there, when I'm like in downtown Budapest, or when I am near the school where I grew up, that's where I have the most significant memories. And I think a lot of the people, like even things that I do, I've like picked up random Hungarian ways of life and mannerisms in English. like I even think about some of the ways that I compliment people in Hungary. Everyone is very honest and very blunt, and it's not offensive to just observe things about others. It's just a part of life, part of conversation.
Yeah.
And then I noticed like when I got to America, especially in the South, I came up against this very passive aggressive culture very much friendly. And I think I like came off, I even remember there's this thing in Hungary, if you don't know people, you don't really talk to them or make eye contact when you're walking down the street. In South Carolina, if you don't say hi, it's rude. Yeah. And so I remember when I was at college, just walking down the street and I was like not saying hi to people because that would be weird. That would definitely socially make me an outcast. But my friends noticed and they brought it up with me and they were like, do you just hate everyone? And I was like, no, I don't. I want to make friends. And then I started saying hi to people because that was like the way things were done. So it's just interesting to pick up mannerisms, I think, in memories of the ways that even the way that I think is formed, like being very honest, very blunt. I don't like being passive aggressive. I don't like it when others are passive aggressive with me. And that was just very formational in my identity.
Yeah. With identity, I'll ask you this first since we're talking about it, is how does your identity as an MK mix with your identity as a child of God?
Oh, for sure. So much mixing. Very confusing at first. I think having parents that are missionaries, there was always a lot of pressure on me. I think unspoken, unintended, but still pressure to be a certain way, to be a good Christian child, uphold all of the moral standings. I think that made me a perfectionist, even and judgmental of others, because what I was taught was there was a certain way of life of being a Christian, and that's what it was, and that's who I should be. And so I even think like the most significant thing that happened in my walk with the Lord was when I moved away from Hungary and moved away from my parents to college, because that was the first time where I had the option living without that pressure. That's really when my faith became my own, because no longer was it an expectation. It was finally a choice. And I don't think my family or my community ever intended to do that.
Yeah.
But because it's so significant, it's so central to being an MK, like your parents' literal job is at least some involvement with like being a child of God or helping others to know how they can be a children of God or inviting people into that. So the people that I'm always around, or even the things that my family does, it's always centered around that as a focus. And so I think I had to learn that it was actually a choice that I had. Yeah.
I definitely felt that way as well. Sarah, could you answer that question?
Well, first, what I love about my identity as a child of God is that He is the one that gets to define me, that He is the one that made me and is writing my story. As I continue to experience that dissonance between who I feel on the inside and who other people maybe perceive or expect me to be on the outside, I'm tempted to focus on one or the other. I just read the story of the Transfiguration in Luke 9, where Jesus asks, who do others say I am? And they say the prophet. Who do you say? Messiah. But even their understanding of Messiah was different. And so He had to teach them He was going to die. He's not going to overthrow Rome. But then God comes and He says, you know, this is my son, my chosen one. Listen to Him. It's helpful for me to remember I'm not defined by what other people expect me to be, if they expect me to be American or something else, but it's who God defines me as. And He is the one who wrote my story. He wrote it that I would live in Slovenia and America, now Central Asia. And so He has a purpose in all of that. And so can guard and express all of those aspects of me.
Okay. So Paul, you're the last person we'll ask this question to.
I love that you use the phrase child of God for that, because I feel like that's part of where a clash has been and where I've had to grow kind of in understanding my relationship to God. Because I think similar to Hannah, I can relate a lot to internalized pressure, kind of like what she was talking about, of performing to a certain level. So performance has definitely been a struggle for me. But also, I guess on another side, of achieving. Like, I think that I felt a pressure of, yes, like maybe I should be like a good Christian, so everyone else has a good example, but also how can I go beyond that? Or I should be doing these things that go beyond. And often I think for me, it hasn't necessarily led to perfectionism, probably because I am not disciplined enough for that. But it has definitely led to a sense of disappointment in myself. I'll feel I have this sense of I could always be doing better. You know, I could always be doing more. I should always be trying to do more. And it's been really good this past month, kind of for one of the classes that me and my wife have been taking. We got to study the passage of Mephibosheth a lot and applying that to the experience of an MKF scene. I could see so much of myself. Like if I was put in that position that he was put in of given. So in 2 Samuel 9, if you're not familiar with it, it's a really awesome story. But being put in that position of being freely given and restored to so much, how I would respond to that would be performance and feeling I need to earn this that I've been given. But God invites us to sit at the table with him freely as one of his own sons, as his child. And so that's really been speaking the gospel to my heart as a performer and the disappointment that I can have in myself.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. It's actually been great hearing from all of you guys because so many of you, I totally relate being a missionary kid to. I definitely relate a lot to the performance or feeling like you have to earn your parents' approval or God's approval, being like a perfectionist, because I am naturally a perfectionist. And so I want to be liked, I want to be loved, I want to do things perfectly. And sometimes it's hard being a missionary kid because people expect you to be this perfect little Christian. And I'm like, I'm not perfect though. Thank you guys so much for sharing. Like Paul shared at the beginning, he actually works with an organization called MK to MK with That's Within Crew. So if you're a missionary kid or a third culture kid that is college or under, MK to MK could have some great resources for you. You can go to the website mktomk.org to learn more. There you'll find info on upcoming summer missions, resources for parents, kids, and teenagers, as well as links to their social media and blog. TCKVOF is now on 10 podcast platforms. So if you want to stay connected to us and ask a question or a topic you would like us to discuss in the future, you can click on the message button on Anchor and leave us a voice message. Thank you again for all of you guys for sharing with us and also for listening to our podcast and what God has to do with being a missionary kid and being a third culture kid. I hope you guys have a great rest of the week.